Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 132 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, I'm really excited to have Craig Emmerich with us. Craig graduated in electrical engineering and has spent the last 15 plus years researching nutrition and working with thousands of clients alongside his wife, Maria Emmerich. He's an international best-selling author of Keto, The Complete Guide, and The Carnivore Cookbook. He uses his knowledge of how our bodies work to help clients heal and lose weight, leveraging their biology to make it easy. So excited to have you here, Craig. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I was, you know, excited because we just had Maria on about 10 episodes ago. She was actually in December, episode 122, which I'll link here in the notes. Because if you haven't listened to that interview yet, go back and listen to that as well, because the two of you together are so powerful. So love what you both are doing. We got to hear Maria's story, which was incredible, but I'd really like your story is also really powerful. So I'd love for you just to kick things off and just kind of tell us a little bit about your own health journey.
Yeah. Maria started down this path, you know, I don't know, 23, 24 years ago now. It was initially to, you know, fight the health issues she was dealing with. She had PCOS and IBS and these different health issues, extra weight she was carrying, she wanted to get rid of. And she started on this path because, you know, she was following all the traditional advice, eating zero fat and, you know, healthy whole grains and all these things and exercising more and more and to the point where she started running marathons. And yet she still couldn't kick these issues or lose the extra weight. And, you know, it came to where she started just diving into the research and studying this. You know, during this time that we were together, I didn't have those health issues at the time. So I didn't have the pressing need. You know, I had maybe 30, 40 pounds of extra weight on me that I could have gotten rid of, but wasn't too concerned about at the time. And so it took me a little while. It took me 5-6 years to come around to this way of eating. And what it really came down to was she would make me stuff during the week and I would eat whatever she made me. And I would just feel a lot better when I would eat her food than if, you know, like on the weekends I would go to restaurants and I'd eat whatever and I just feel like crap. And I just decided, you know what, I want to feel this way all the time. And so about, 16, 17 years ago, I just started eating keto with her and never turned back. Just felt better. Wouldn't get those afternoon slumps at work. You know, as an electrical engineer, and at the time product manager, there's a lot of long meetings and things that I was attending where I would just, you know, struggle with energy and staying awake. And when I ate this way, that never happened. Those are the benefits I was seeing. I was keto for a number of years until about, 8-9 years ago. I started to have some pain in my back and I wasn't real sure what it was. I thought it was an old football injury I had, and it started to move up my back and my shoulders and my neck. And it progressively got worse over 5-6 years to the point where, I couldn't throw a football as far as my 9-year-old son at the time. And I was like, okay, something's wrong here. I got to figure this out, you know? And went and got a bunch of tests done and everything looked fine. Except my inflammation, my CRP was like 50. And normally you want that to be like below 2. So I had very high inflammation, even though I was eating a very low inflammation diet. Right. And so something just didn't make sense. Roundabout finally came around, and after some false negatives, which is standard Lyme test is like false negative, like 70% of the time. I got a proper Lyme test, which is something like the IGX, and it came back positive. So I had Lyme disease. And what's interesting about it is many people with Lyme disease tend to get neurological issues like brain fog and these kind of neurological issues that occur with Lyme. And I never got that. And I think my belief is that it was because I was keto for 10 years prior, and that, you know, the ketones and something about that, you know, fueling the brain kind of kept me from getting that. So it was kind of a blessing and a curse because it enabled me to tolerate it for so long undiagnosed, but kind of a curse because, you know, the earlier you treat Lyme, the better your outcome is. And so ended up, you know, I've been treating it the last 3 or 4 years, but, you know, still deal with quite a bit of pain. One thing I found about 3 years ago was that 3 or 4 years ago was that going from keto to carnivore can really help a lot of people with pain with Lyme. You know, we have clients all the time that go from standard American diet to keto with Lyme disease and see big improvements, but I'd always been keto. So the next step to carnivore actually really helped my pain a lot. So that's kind of where I ended up to where I am today.
Wow. That is so interesting. And yeah, really just fascinated to think about, yeah, since you had already been doing 10 years keto, what it might've been like if you had gotten, you know, Lyme on the standard American diet or the way that you used to be eating. So like you said, kind of a blessing and a curse because you were able, you know, you didn't maybe recognize it right away. And Lyme, I just know, is such a hard diagnosis to get, like you're saying, so many tests that aren't accurate. So I think this is
diagnosed a lot. You know, a lot of times it's diagnosed as fibromyalgia or these other things that, because the doctors just know the standard Western blot Lyme test. And when they do that, you know, like I said, up to 70% of the time, it comes back negative when they're really positive. So now they're like, oh, it's negative. Let's go. This must be something else. So it's really is a problem with diagnosis.
Yeah. And I think this is really, I don't know a lot about Lyme. So I'm really glad that you're talking to us today, because I bet a lot of people listening have someone close to them affected by it. And I didn't realize that it can cause, I've learned more about it over the years, but never realized it could cause like the neurological stuff and then even just pain, and that it's really hard to treat, it sounds like, as well. So
yes. Yes. That's kind of the thing with it is, if you get it right away, like let's say you do get the bullseye, which you don't have to get the bullseye from a tick bite to get Lyme, but that's one sign that it could be. And if you treat it right away in the first month or so, it's pretty easy to treat for most people. And once it gets chronic, where it just is drags on the immune system, and so the immune function gets depressed and you have all these other issues start to creep up that the immune function can typically take care of, but because it's battling the Lyme, now you get mold and heavy metals and things that accumulate in the body and cause all these other myriad of symptoms and issues that, you know, normally your body would take care of. And that's when it becomes such a problem to deal with, because it's kind of like peeling back layers of an onion. You got to deal with all these other issues and in addition to the Lyme. So
And for you, that really manifested in that like back pain and neck pain. And is that still what you kind of struggle with now even?
Yes. It's pain and immobility. One of the things with Lyme is, the other thing with Lyme, I should say, is that it can stimulate sort of an autoimmune reaction and basically start an autoimmune reaction in the body. Because what's an autoimmune reaction? Autoimmune reaction is where the body immune system starts to fight something, and then it goes overboard and starts fighting good cells, right? And I think what happens with Lyme is the same kind of thing. It's in this chronic state of inflammation and fighting this Lyme that it starts to, you know, attack good cells, which can cause autoimmune. And I think I have ankylosing spondylitis now as a result, because that's, you know, the severe immobility of the spine and pain. But that's, you know, another one of those layers of the onion, if you will, that can happen.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, what is treatment typically then? Like if you were to go to a doctor, I'm sure nutrition isn't talked about at the doctor's office.
We could do about 3 or 4 episodes of this on just treatment for Lyme.
Yeah.
I've done an incredible amount of treatments over the past four years or so, five. Can't even remember how long it's been I've been treating this. Started out the traditional route of throwing the kitchen sink of antibiotics and all of that at it. I was doing 3 high powered antibiotics simultaneously for 9 straight months. I mean, it was just like an all out attack to try to kill it, ruined my guts and all of that. So, I had to recover from that. Then I went into other treatments and, parasites and mold treatments and heavy metals. I had all my old silver amalgam fillings taken out and replaced. I had cavitation surgery, which is like you have an infection in a cavity, whether it's wisdom teeth or a root canal. So I had a tooth removed and my root canal or my wisdom teeth had to be, that area had to be opened up and the jaw scraped and ozone put in to kill these infections. And I mean, just, I could go on and on and on right now. And honestly, what is the entire Lyme community, that the leading edge experts in Lyme are starting to evolve to, is less of kill the Lyme and more of let's get this immune function going so that it can deal with it on its own. Because up to, I can't remember the, I saw a study, there was up to like 30% of people in America will test positive for Lyme. But not all 30% have symptoms, right? So some people, their immune function or whatever it is, they're just able to deal with it. Where other people like me, my immune function's not dealing with it anymore. And so that's kind of where we're going right now, is mostly looking at how do I support immune function and, mitochondria health and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting. So for most people, again, that are eating the standard American diet, did you find, and you said you work with some clients that are doing that and then switch to keto and are seeing some pretty big improvement just by changing their diet? Are you seeing that?
Yeah, definitely. The last data I've seen on this, it's like a long time ago, like 2016, they estimated at least like 750,000 people a year are getting Lyme. And I'm sure it's a lot more than that. I mean, that's just in the United States. We were in, Maria was speaking in Moscow a number of years ago. I can't remember, 5 years ago, we did a keto event there and she brought up Lyme and she asked, how many here have Lyme or know somebody, have somebody close to you that have Lyme? And like half the hands went up in the room. I mean, it's a big problem. And like you said, most people just going from standard American diet to keto can really improve the pain and some of the symptoms. For some people, going a little further really can help too. And that's where carnivore can come in. And we talked about this in our carnivore cookbook is, what's your why? Why do you want to do carnivore? Because that can kind of change how you do it. If it's for some of these chronic conditions, it can work as a really good elimination diet. So you basically go all the way down to just beef and salt. That's like the most tolerated food there is, ruminants and salt. And then you kind of work your way back up, adding other proteins, maybe adding eggs, maybe adding, some different vegetables. And you basically see where your tolerance is and what inflames your pain. But the reason, one of the reasons I went down that path was I knew about somebody prior to this, Charlene Anderson. She's been carnivore for like 23 years now. And it was to deal with her chronic Lyme pain. And so she went down that route because it really helped with her chronic Lyme pain. And she's stayed that way for like 23 years now, and she's just thriving. And so that's kind of where it started with myself. And then we, eventually led to us writing the book.
Oh, I'm so glad to talk more about carnivore, because that's something a lot of listeners have asked about, and I haven't had really anyone speak directly about it. So I'm loving this, because we're going to cover awesome. The Lyme, because I'm sure that's a lot of people are resonating with a lot of people, but then using just the idea of using the carnivore diet to treat kind of things like not just Lyme disease, but probably other chronic conditions as well. So maybe just because I haven't had anyone speak about carnivore before, and a lot of people I think know what it means, but just give us kind of a brief overview of what it looks like to go from like keto to carnivore, for instance.
Carnivore is essentially keto without plants, right? I mean, it's, you know, you're just eating animal proteins, maybe some salt, little, mild spices if you want. Again, that's kind of building back up as you add more spices and things and see what your tolerance is. But you know, it can be really powerful as we called it in the book the carnivore autoimmune protocol, because it can be really powerful in that way, because a lot of people, their autoimmune reactions, whether it's, you know, autoimmune Hashimoto's, autoimmune disorders in general, you name it, it can a lot of times be triggered from a food source, right? So what happens is this food gets in, and the body starts attacking this food because it's foreign and or doesn't like it, and it causes inflammation, and then it snowballs and creates the same autoimmune response, you know, that something like Lyme can. And so we look at it as the ultimate autoimmune protocol, because you really go down to the most bare bones as you can, starting out with beef and salt for a few weeks, and then each week adding in another food and just going by your body, see how your body reacts. And that's the best thing. Like, you know, a lot of people do sensitivity tests and these things, and they're not very accurate. And what's the most accurate is how your body reacts, right? You eat something and you gain 2 or 3 pounds of water weight because of it's you're retaining water, or some skin rashes show up, a reaction, you know, all these type of reactions, that's your body telling you it doesn't like that food, right? And so when you go by those symptoms, you can really build basically a menu for yourself that your body tolerates best.
Yeah, I mean, beef and salt seems like the ultimate elimination.
Yeah, it is.
Diet, so
some people are like, whoa, wait. And, but, you know, one of the things that Maria is great at is coming up with varieties and variations on recipes to keep variety in it. And there's a lot of things you can do even within that. And for most people, that's just going to be a starting point, right? And they'll build back on whatever they can. But what's interesting about it too, and this is what we really dove into in the book, is if you go back to our early human ancestors, so you're talking about 50 to 100,000 years ago, when the early humans and the Neanderthals were showing up, you know, on the evolutionary map, if you will. When those people, when that happened, what were they eating that made them grow this big brain and start to do these things and actually shrink their gut a bit from other primates? What happened? You know, what were they eating when this happened? Because that seems really important, right? There's a bunch of studies now that look at their archaeological evidence, where they'll take bones and fossils from these early humans. And if you look at the collagen in the bones and you do a nitrogen analysis, so this they use equipment to analyze the types and amounts of nitrogen in it, you can trace back what their protein sources were. And so you can say, were these coming from plants? And if so, what kind of plants? Or were they coming from animals? And what kind of animals and how much? When time and time and time again, these studies are happening. There's dozens of them now. They all point to these early humans being primarily carnivore, and they ate large herbivores. So you're talking like woolly mammoths, rhinos, these big herbivores that they were killing and eating. And you think about a woolly mammoth, think how big, you know, you, depending on the size of the cow, 1 to 2 cows could feed a human for a year. So call it 2 cows will feed a human for an entire year. Think about a woolly mammoth, and you got a little tribe of these early humans. They're going to eat off of that thing for months, right? And this was one of the pieces of evidence that just points to, we became human and grew a big brain because we were primarily eating animal proteins. And the gut reflects this as well. The long and short intestine, right? Short intestine is great, or small intestine is great for processing animal proteins. And we have a much like 3 times larger one than other primates. The large bowel is great for plant matter. And ours is like a third as long as other primates. So, you know, this one's growing, this one's shrinking. Our stomach acid went way acidic. You know, our human stomach acid is a pH of 1.5. You know, other carnivores like lions are like 2. So we're even more acidic in our stomach pH, and it follows that across the trophic levels, the different groups. The less acidic you are, the more of a herbivore or omnivore you are. So it actually follows. If you look at all the herbivores that primarily eat plants like deer, and their stomach acid is actually really low. If you start looking at herbivores that eat both or omnivores that eat both, it's kind of maybe down like 3 or 4. And then you go to carnivores and they're like 2. You go to scavengers who are eating meat that's turning, they're like 1. Like hyenas, their stomach acid is 1 because they get that meat's turning. Well, humans are 1.5. And go back to those early roots. That big woolly mammoth, guess what? They don't have refrigerators. They're eating on it for weeks and weeks and weeks, this whole tribe, and it's turning. And their stomach acid was able to handle that because you had, you know, such an acidic stomach. So all these little pieces of evidence, like, so you know, today it's looked at as some crazy thing, but if you look back to what made us human in the first place, it was being primarily carnivore.
Yeah. And I do think a lot of people, well, I know even just for people just giving up sugar and flour feel so extreme, you know, and I'm sure people then, you know, going to keto feel so extreme. So how do you approach people that are maybe interested in carnivore, but just feel like, oh my gosh, there's no way, like I can give up all of that. Like, how do you kind of start with clients to ease them into it? Cause like you said, it might not be forever to being so restrictive. You kind of experiment what works, and that's going to be different for everyone, what you can tolerate or not.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like any autoimmune protocol, you're going to start out shaving it back, you know, like AIP, which is an autoimmune protocol that is pretty common these days. You know, they shave back a lot of foods and then they add back in and see where it's the same kind of thing. You just shave back a little further and really isolate things that are causing the problems. And another thing, you know, it's again about what's your why. If it's an autoimmune issue that you're trying to deal with, you know, are you willing to take 3 or 4 prescription medications with all the side effects? Or maybe try a month of eating just, you know, beef and slowly adding things back in. You know, it's going to make you feel a lot better, and you're going to find the real root causes of the problems, right? And that's the thing about healthcare too in general is, you know, putting those medications and those prescriptions on to as sort of band-aids on the symptoms to kind of mask the symptoms you're having doesn't fix the root cause. And I think this, we talked about this in our keto book a lot, because that's kind of where I come from with the engineering background, is that systems approach and, you know, finding root causes of things versus just trying to put a band-aid on the outputs. Like if I had a computer chip and my outputs are the signals on the outputs are wrong, I'm going to go back to my inputs. Were my inputs right? Right. Because if my inputs were wrong, okay, now I got to go further upstream and find out why those inputs are wrong, right? That's like a basic engineering, you know, thought process. Well, humans, I look at it as largely the same. You know, for the most part, unless you've got an actual genetic disorder, your body's going to do what it's supposed to do when it's given the right inputs, right? There's a lot of different inputs. Obviously, diet's a huge one. Sleep is important. You know, exercise, you know, vitamin D, you know, how much sun exposure and vitamin D you get. All these things are inputs to the body. And when they get off, guess what? You get bad outputs. You get disease, you get problems. So, you know, coming back to the root causes and fixing those will just be so much better for you overall and in the long term, better health.
Yeah, and a lot of those are really like linked together too. You know, if you're sleeping better, you usually can make better nutritional choices. But if you're making those better nutritional choices, a lot of times you're sleeping better. They're all interlinked. Same with like exercise, reducing stress. They all work, you know, together so well.
Absolutely. And even the light part, to take it another step further, is a circadian rhythm and how if you get some, you know, light exposure in the morning and then limit the blue light in the evening, it naturally allows the brain to produce melatonin and help you sleep. So, I mean, it's all part of the solution.
Yes, I've been reading more about that and trying to do that when I can in Portland, Oregon, of getting the sun first thing in the morning, even through the clouds. I just get what I can.
Yeah, it can be tough, but you know, even a little bit, you know, just to get on the eye and helps wake you. And there's the sensor that they've identified in the back of the eye that communicates to the SCN of the brain to basically tell it to produce melatonin or stop producing melatonin. So, I mean, this isn't woo-woo stuff. This has, you know, been proven by science.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and kind of back to that why, I think that is really important. I'm curious, because I know you and Maria work with so many different clients. When someone comes to you, do you typically start them on keto unless they have some kind of autoimmune or something going on that really you feel like they need to go a little more I don't want to say extreme, but kind of dig in a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's your why is very important. Exactly. And, you know, for most people going to keto will be enough, and just eliminating the grains and the, you know, sugars and the processed, you know, foods, that's going to be a huge improvement for health and weight and everything for a vast majority of people. There are definitely some people in autoimmune, in chronic pain, some brain type issues like bipolar and whatnot. We've seen carnivore, you know, there's another person in this community, Amber O'Hearn, who has been carnivore for like 16, 17 years because it helps with her bipolar. And she mm-hmm. finds that if she's strict carnivore, her bipolar symptoms are in check, right? And so for her, it was a tool to get there as well. And, you know, for the most part though, you know, just getting rid of the junk and eating keto will be a huge improvement for most people.
Yeah. What else? I'm just curious, other that you've noticed besides maybe the bipolar, Lyme disease, what other chronic conditions have you noticed that people are seeing improvement after trying carnivore? Because there might be people listening that haven't even considered that as an option.
So here's the thing too, and this is something that I find interesting in media, in traditional media, keto is this quick fix weight loss diet, right? And we've been doing this for over 20 years now, and the weight loss is just a bonus. Like people do this diet and stick with it because of how good they feel, because of the medications they get off, because the healing they see or the reversal of disease and issues and symptoms that they see, that's why they stick with it. It's not the weight loss is just like, oh, that's nice, but wow, do I feel better. And on our blog, right at the top, I have this success stories. And if you want to go be inspired, go there. We have, of course, you know, weight loss where there's, you know, over 250 pounds lost, over 200 pounds lost, like clubs. And, you know, there's so many that we stopped at 150 pounds lost because it was filling the page, you know, because we still have lots of people with over 100 pounds lost, but we just can't even fit them on the page. But you go down then below that and we have success stories. And we put together, you know, handfuls of some of the top success stories for each kind of category. And it's crazy how much improvement people see across a wide range of things. You know, of course, diabetes, metabolic disorder is a huge one. But there's tons of other things like autoimmune disorders. There's digestive issues like Crohn's, IBS, colitis. You see huge improvements. Things like skin issues, eczema, and, you know, these type of skin issues. Kidney disease, people reversing or going from, you know, stage 3 to stage 2 kidney disease or better just with diet changes. MS and Parkinson's and these, and of course Alzheimer's. But you know, we've had, I remember this one testimony, this client could walk on as part of his heel for the first time in years after just like 2 months of eating keto. I mean, those are some pretty crazy improvements in symptoms just with diet changes. And we actually get very common where doctors don't believe it. One just recently happened. A woman she messaged us through online. She had a brain tumor that was 11 millimeters and it was, pretty serious situation. She changed diet and did couple things that we recommended, and it had, she went for a checkup and it was 8 millimeters. And the doctor did not believe that diet could do that. So she made her get another scan. It was like a week ago, and it was 6 millimeters. Wow. So she's like, I can't wait to see him in 2 weeks to see what he says about this, because it actually kept shrinking. So not only has diet made a huge improvement there, I mean, that's life-changing. So I think it's more for us, it's always been more about health and health improvements than it is weight loss.
I agree. Even for my own personal story, like my motivation was weight loss, but that's like way down on the, you know, the benefits. There's so many other things that have been, I'm just so grateful for. I also want to point out that one why I was really glad to have Maria on, I think when people hear keto, like you're kind of saying, is that quick fix? There's so many wrong ways to keto too. Like, I just wanted to address that, you know, like all the keto, it's just like the diet industry, unfortunately, has taken that over. So there are, you know, there are better, healthier ways to do it. You can eat pretty crappy unhealthily and still can technically be keto. And I think that turns a lot of people off, but there are really healthy ways to do it. And that's what I love about you and, you know, Maria's books, is that you coach people through like the healthy way to do it. So for anyone listening that's tried it and, you know, maybe it didn't work out, make sure you're kind of trying to follow something with some healthier guidelines, you know, like all that fake keto snack. Oh, yeah. Like
to be frank, we tell our clients, if it says keto on the label, avoid it, because almost all of it is garbage, processed garbage. You know, the things like meats or, you know, low carb veggies, they don't have a keto label on them, right? Eat those, eat whole foods. But it can actually get to the point where some of these, you know, Marie and I, again, not to keep tooting the horn, but, you know, we've been doing this for over 20 years, so we've kind of seen it all. And about 5 years ago, we saw this trend of keto getting popular, because it wasn't for a lot of, we were the crazy people for 15 years. And then all of a sudden about 5 years ago, it started to get popular. But with that, a bunch of new people came in promoting bad advice, you know, eating 80% of your calories as fat. You have to do this to be keto, or just, you know, eating, having bulletproof coffees and putting butter on everything and all this kind of stuff to be keto. And not only can that, will that definitely slow your weight loss results, but your healing too. And one of the things we've done many posts on this and whatnot, but if you, I don't care if you're vegan to carnivore, if you put two plates in front of somebody and say they have the same number of calories on each plate, but this plate over on the right is almost no vitamins and minerals, and the one on the left is loaded with tons of vitamins and minerals, more nutrient dense food, which one's better for you? Everybody's going to say the more nutrient dense food, right? Well, if you put a animal protein on one plate and you put a stick of butter on the other, guess what? There's almost no vitamins and minerals in that stick of butter. There's a little bit of vitamin A. It's just pure energy. MCT oil. I did a comparison once of MCT oil, vitamins and minerals, to cane sugar. Cane sugar has more vitamins and minerals than MCT. Not to say that they're equal, you know, in the body or anything, but from a nutrient status, they're not much different. They're just pure energy. And when you're healing, especially, you need lots of vitamins and minerals to help your body heal. And this is, we put chapters on this in our book, of the vitamins and minerals in animal proteins. Those whole food animal proteins are loaded with vitamins and minerals. They even beat out things like kale or blueberries that you would think are these nutrient dense foods. In reality, the steak is better. Steak has more vitamins and minerals across a wider range of nutrients. And this is just not known for some reason. And then on top of that, it can be damaging. We have a client right now who just came to us who's diabetic. But here's and this goes back to biology. And this is why not only, you know, what we've done as far as whole foods and health, but linking everything back to biology and how the body works. Diabetes is primarily caused by fat cells being overstuffed and inflamed. And then they reject insulin because they don't want to put any more fat in them because they're too big, right? They want to blow up. That can happen if you're 400 pounds. That can happen if you're 100 pounds. If you're 100 pounds, you may or may not have heard that when you're young, you create new fat cells. And after a certain age, you don't create any new ones. You just fill them up or shrink them. right? Well, if you don't have a lot of fat cells on your body, you can overstuff and inflame your fat cells really quickly with maybe 5 pounds of gained weight. That's why you can have somebody who's type 2 diabetic and 110 pounds, which we've had many women like this. They don't have a lot of fat cells. So they, and this was a man who was very lean and diabetic. And this keto expert, if you will, keto guru, was telling them, add more fat, don't eat too much protein, because, you know, another myth, too much protein turns into sugar. And that's another whole myth we get into. But what this was actually doing is damaging him, because adding all the fat in the diet, his fat cells couldn't take any more fat. And it was the reason he was insulin resistant. Mm-hmm. So guess what happened? His triglycerides went through the roof. They went to like 400. His glucose went through the roof. His A1C went up to 7.1. You're saying, why would glucose go up if he's barely eating any protein and he's eating no carbohydrates? Because insulin is, this insulin resistance is not enabling insulin to do its job. And insulin doesn't only deal with carbs and glucose, it deals with protein and it deals with fat. And so you're dumping tons of fat in the body. It puts a huge load on insulin to try to put it somewhere. And guess what? The fat cells are saying, I don't want it. And so it builds up in the blood. It builds up in organs and makes metabolic syndrome even worse, eating no carbs. So let that sink in, right? And so now he's eating much more protein, limiting his dietary fat, limiting it much more. And he's, you know, turning that ship around. But, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, looking at from a biology and health approach is so important, and what can actually be dangerous with some of this bad information that's out there with keto.
Yeah. And that's, again, why I really encourage people to read your books or reach out to you just for a way to do it correctly. Because again, I think like you, a lot of people are motivated by the weight loss and are looking for that quick weight loss fix and want to make it as easy as possible. But really, when you get onto the right path, it should feel really sustainable and easy. I think that's how you know that you're eating the way that's designed for your body, because like it should just kind of click into place that, wow, I just feel so good. And exactly. Then you almost forget about the weight you're losing because you're experiencing all these benefits that you didn't even realize like would, you know, change. I mean, that happened for me. I didn't even realize how bad I was feeling until I started feeling really, really good.
We hear that all the time. Yeah. I didn't realize I could feel this good, you know, cause it just becomes normal. You know, that feeling of sluggish and afternoon sleepiness and all that.
And so many people suffer that we have normalized that as a society, like, oh yeah, of course at 3 o'clock you need like a coffee and a Snickers bar or a cookie or whatever. But yeah, you really
need a nap. And
yeah. When you compare yourself to other people, it just, you know, it's unfortunate that so many people are stuck in that cycle. Yeah. I'm curious though, since keto can be done, you know, in the wrong way, how about carnivore? Do you ever have people that were kind of coached the wrong way for carnivore? And what are some tips then for people to do it correctly?
Absolutely. You know, the same principle I just outlined, you know, and it's almost worse than carnivore in the carnivore community. You see these people who just promote dumping, you know, eat the fattiest cuts of meat you can get and dump, you know, put a bunch of butter and fat on top of it. That's what they promote. And it's there's two basic misunderstandings of food in that way. And that number one, nutrient density. The animal proteins are the most nutrient dense foods. You want more of those. And number two, where does the fat go? Like I've never gotten an answer from these people about where does the dietary fat go? Cause it goes only one place really. I mean, if you really want to break it down, there's really three places it can go. The first is right through you. Right. But there's studies time and time again that have shown that, you know, varying dietary fat from like 68 grams of fat a day to like 150 grams of fat a day, the fecal output of fat stayed constant and was like 8 grams or less of fat going through you. So it's not going there. Then where's it going? It's getting absorbed. It's getting absorbed into the bloodstream. From here, it's only two places it can go. It can either be burned as fuel or go into your fat cells, right? if it's burned as fuel, it's not burning your own body fat as fuel. If it goes into your fat cells, it's adding to the fat stores on your body. And if weight loss is the goal, neither of these things are good, right? And so, and plus, if you are forcing the fat, you're probably not getting enough protein because you're filling yourself up with the fat and not getting enough protein to get the vitamins and minerals and nutrient dense food that you really need. And the protein you need to support, you know, all the turnover and protein you have all the time in your body. And not to mention trying to build muscle maybe. So, you know, all of these things, and it's really common. We had somebody come to us, this woman, she was over 300 pounds and this carnivore guru was telling them, add 12 tablespoons of MCT oil to your meat every day. So not, you eat your meat and then you have to add at least, you know, eating fatty, like ribeyes and fatty cuts, then add 12 tablespoons of MCT oil on top of that. She was struggling. She wasn't losing any weight and she was actually starting to gain weight. She gained about 10 pounds and asked the person, what do I do? They said, try 16, a cup of MCT a day. And it's like, where do you think it's going? I don't understand that concept. And she came to us and was rapidly starting to lose weight when she shifted up her macros. So yeah, you can definitely do carnivore wrong. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who promote nothing but really high fat carnivore in the carnivore community.
I think it's so frustrating for people in the world of nutrition. There's so much contradicting information out there, you know? Yeah. And for a while it was like fat is bad. And then now it's like fat is amazing, but it's all like, you know, like there is a balance.
If you're in maintenance, sure, have the ribeyes and have the fatty cuts. That's fine as long as you get enough protein still. But I don't think it's ever good to drink a bulletproof coffee or let's be honest. What is a bulletproof coffee? It's warm ice cream. You want to start your day with a cup of warm ice cream and think that's like good? it's no nutrients. And at the end of the day, if you want not only the weight loss and short-term health, but the long-term health, you want to be feeding your cells with getting enough protein and getting enough vitamins and minerals to have that long-term health. And that's always going to be the protein, not the fat.
I love you talking about the vitamins and minerals. I think people forget about that so much. Really, that's what we need. So what are the percentages that you loosely use for people? Because I'm sure people are wondering that because, you know, some fat I think is good. I know. So when people are kind of shooting to make a plate, what do you kind of recommend?
So we don't do percentages just because it's too variable. Calories and you do, to make the math easy, 1,000 calories and do 10% carbs. That's 100 calories of carbs, which is what, 25 grams of carbs. But if you eat 3,000 calories, that's 75 grams of carbs. It's going to be a very different situation from a keto perspective, percentages also ignore the body's need for amino acids, right? If you're a thin, 5-foot-tall woman who's 30 years old, your protein requirements to maintain the muscle and tissue you have is drastically different than a man who's 6 foot and, 200 pounds of lean mass. So the protein is really based on your lean mass. How much amino acids do I need to build and repair all the time? So you calculate it based on lean mass. Carbs, we say keep below 20. So now those two are covered. Now it's just fat, and fat is a dial that you adjust based on your goals. So you dial the fat down, dial down in the diet. If you want to burn more of your own body's fat for fuel, you dial it up. If you want to maintain or even gain, we have people who need to gain weight because they're underweight, like kids and whatnot. And we just dial the fat dial up then in those cases, but we still make sure they're getting enough protein. And so that's kind of the way we look at it is from a macro perspective, get your macros right. And you'll do great.
Yeah. Oh, that's really helpful. Thank you. And again, it's like when people think of fat, if you're dialing it up, it's still, there's different types of fat and it's dialing up the healthier fat choices, not the.
As far as the low end, there is kind of a low end, maybe 20 grams of fat a day that you need to, absorb fat soluble vitamins. A lot of your sex hormones are made from cholesterol and fats. So hormone production, it's only about 20, 30 grams of fat a day that you need for that. So as long as you're getting above that, you're fine, especially if you're more obese. So if you're like 100 pounds overweight, your body can just tap all this fat storage and use that in place of diet. If you're real close to your goal weight, you don't want to dial the fat down that low because, you know, you don't have a lot of fat to utilize on your own body. And so, you know, you want to, it kind of varies a bit based on your current state too.
Yeah. And just like I always say this, like your diet's constantly evolving too, because like you even talked about, your needs at one age are going to be very different from a few years later even, or.
And that's a very good point too, is about protein as well. We didn't mention this, but as you get older, there's something called a leucine curve shift. Leucine is the amino acid in protein that's primarily responsible for starting muscle protein synthesis. So building muscle, right? So if you get enough leucine, you start building muscle. In that curve of the threshold when you start shifts with age. So as you get older, above 50, 60, especially 70, you need even more protein just to maintain. And so we adjust for that in our calculators. We increase the protein minimum or goal as you get older.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, see, I think that's just so important. It's something that, you know, there's not that one diet that's going to work forever and ever and ever. You are having to like continually tweak, and it goes by kind of how you're feeling too.
Yeah.
Definitely. I do have one other question that I'm curious about with the carnivore diet. Is there any time that you have found that it doesn't help people? Like maybe some people that have tried it, and then is there any people that you might not recommend it for?
I'm not sure if there's anybody I would not recommend it for. You know, I get the only thing I could possibly think of is like young kids, you know, thing is, babies, their brain is so disproportionately large compared to their body. You know, I think your body grows by, I don't know how much percent, but your skull only grows by like 30 or something. So when you're an infant, you got this huge brain compared to your gut, and the brain is an energy hog. And that's actually why babies will have very high blood ketones and require a lot of glucose and require a lot of protein because they need everything to fuel this huge brain of theirs. Babies are never below like 0.5 blood ketones when they're breastfed or when they're young. And it goes rapidly up to like 2.0 blood ketones after an hour or two of not eating. So, you know, people say keto is dangerous. Well, breastfed babies at keto. So is it dangerous for them? Right. But anyway, back to what we're talking about. One of the things some people will see digestive issues when they start out, maybe some diarrhea or constipation. Constipation is usually not getting enough salt, not enough electrolytes, because the colon is this master extractor of moisture. And so if you're not getting enough electrolytes to retain water, it pulls it out of the stool, causing constipation. So adding salt usually helps. And then diarrhea, a lot of times people will, as they transition, they maybe were eating a lot lower protein. And so adding some HCL and digestive enzymes to help with that transition stage to digest the protein better can help with that. But I'd say that's the main ish things you see, other than people just, you know, wanting more variety and more choice type things. But most people feel a lot better when they prioritize the protein bar.
Well, thank you so much. I feel like this time has gone so fast, but it's been so fascinating for me. I've learned so much, and I know I'll make sure I put how to contact you and how to, you know, get a hold of your books in case this is really kind of speaking to people that want to give this a try. Cause I really think it's so important too. And I'm so grateful for you and Maria and the work that you're doing, because you're doing it the right way when there is so much bad advice out there. It's nice to hear, you know, people that are doing this really well, and then all these success stories of people that you're really helping and who are thriving. But I wanted to make sure, in case we didn't get to cover something that you wanted to talk about today, is there anything else that we didn't get to, or maybe just a last takeaway that you'd want listeners to know?
No, I think we covered a lot. You know, one thing to point out is reason we wanted this to be so important to us to be the healthy way in for the long term is we adopted our sons 10 years ago, and they came to us at 1 and 2 years old, and we wanted to make sure we were feeding them the best way for their health long term. And we just feed them what we eat. And, you know, it's strange how people are like, is keto safe for kids? They're eating meat and low carb vegetables. When is, you know, I have this nice meme where it's like the rainbow of Fruit Loops and candy that a typical kid eats now versus a picture of my son with a little Asian dish with some beef and vegetables in it, kind of stir fry. And that's not safe, but the other one's fine. Like, that's how crazy it's gotten. But when we, by sticking to whole foods and doing the right things of nutrient-dense foods as the priority, I know my kids are getting the nutrition they need for health. And so if it's good for them, it'll be good for anybody's long-term health. And that's why we focus on it so much. But I mean, otherwise, yeah, I mean, you can find tons of free information of ours at our blog. You can get to everything through ketomaria.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so, so much. This has been so amazing. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.